something went on here, something went on there. And
this time on TNT.
It's our 40th episode spectacular. We debrief on the live show.
We talk about some new shows coming up.
And we take a few questions from a few of our buds. All coming up right now on TNT.
Let me ask you this right quick, you know what I mean?
Hey, hey, hey.
Jeremy Taggart, our first podcast since the live show. How are you feeling, bud?
I'm feeling great. This is 40?
It's number 40.
Is this 40?
Yeah, podcast this is in it? Middle age now.
40? Yeah, did you, I just turned 40 in April.
How'd that go for you?
And, It was fine. Like, I thought it was no big deal.
Until?
And then all of a sudden, like, I had a couple things happen to me where I was like, this is what happens when you're 40. Like, I saw a hair in my ear. Like, a new hair that was long at the end of my ear.
Welcome That's, to like, ear old, hair, like, bud.
My first old man ear hair just came out.
When does nose hair happen? So, is that 50?
Like, gray hair is fine, whatever. Like, nose hairs creep in or whatever, but ear hair is specific. I think that's like, yeah, you've been here a little while. Hey, man, we can't get it perfect. We get it. We make a mistake once in a while here.
What is middle age?
Middle age, well, I guess, once you get older, there's things start coming and going where, you know, your skin's older and warts start showing up and you start shrinking. And
but what number?
All that awesome
when
stuff.
You hear middle age, what number do you think?
Oh, definitely 40, right? No?
I guess. I mean, people are living longer than they ever have.
They are, no. Like, I know 40-year-olds and I feel myself that, like, I might not be too far removed from, you know, being in grade school in my head. So it doesn't feel... I'm sure it's no different than anybody else who's lived on this planet, but it seems to me that it's 40 is kind of like you have enough of a backstory that it feels like a couple lifetimes of stuff.
Carol's grandfather just turned 96, and I was asking him if he ever felt his age in his life, and he was like, never. In his head, he said, I still feel like a teenager. So maybe that's something that you never do. Maybe you never feel your age.
No, I don't. Anybody that I've ever met or that it's old or they've always said that time passes and there's no change in terms of the light that's in your head. I don't think there's an age to that.
I like that.
Age is clearly a measurement and we get used to trying to find answers to numbers and why things happen at certain things, and they certainly do based on factual evidence of, I guess, you know, life from the beginning. But in terms of stuff happening, it's just you live, and I don't think things change. It feels like you're a little kid still, and you're just starting to understand all certain different things, and it's bizarre.
But your body has a way of letting you know how old you are. Like, I definitely notice aches and pains now. I'm 42 that I didn't used to have. But I'll still weekend warrior. Like, the last couple of days I've been shooting some videos and I've been doing pratfalls and things like that. On Saturday, my father-in-law and I put together a playhouse in our backyard for our girls. And, you know, you're bent over for a few hours. You're hauling and loading and lifting lumber around. You feel that the next day.
Yeah. When you're doing the Lee Majors work, the fall guy.
It's true. But
remember
I still,
that show?
Maybe it's because I use my mouth for a living. Like I speak things and say things and whatever.
Yeah.
But every time I use my body and there's some evidence of what I've done, like I built a thing, even if it has instructions, it's still very satisfying.
Oh yeah. No, that's, the strings are popping.
So I want to confess something right off the top, and it's if I sound hushed and whispery, it's because let's tell people two things. One, it's May 24. It's Monday night, May 24, which isn't really May 24. It's May 18th. And the second thing is, I'm in Miami. I'll be home by the time you hear this, so don't rob my house.
Mi amo.
But I'm in a hotel room, and I feel weird about being extra loud guy when I know there are folks on either side of me. Is that Canadian?
It's totally Canadian, but it's also mi amo, and you should be partying. Like, isn't everybody allowed?
Okay, so let's talk about mi amo for a second, because...
Yeah.
I would trade having beats.
I've only been there once, yeah.
I trade having beats in the elevator for a light switch in my room any day. Everywhere you go, it's like, in the elevators, in the lobby, and everyone's wearing ill-fitting spandex items. And
they're made as well, yeah.
The lobby of the hotel that I'm staying in is like the hottest club in town, and everybody calls it the club. Oh. And it doesn't even get going till midnight.
So it's not even going for 2 hours. Well, we're late night here on a Sunday, Saturday with the long weekend, but it's now Monday. So it's like, this is Sunday night in the... Well, is there a holiday on the Monday down there?
No.
Memorial Day, is that next weekend?
No,
next
but my friend Memorial, just told right? me that Monday night is actually industry night. So Monday night is off the hook at my hotel.
Yeah. Tay Diggs might be down there.
Yeah, Dare to Dream.
Tay Diggs, perhaps Kanye, maybe a Kardashian is afoot.
Well, I was shooting something with my friend on the boardwalk yesterday, and this Miles Teller walked by. Do you know who that is?
Yeah, who's that Miles
He's
Teller?
He's in a movie called Whiplash with Juno's dad. Oh, yes. And it was about a drummer, right?
Okay. Yeah, well, I wasn't a big fan of the drumming in that movie, but I liked the movie. That movie, like, nobody drums all loud and thrashy like that. That doesn't make any sense to me. Did you watch Whiplash?
That's what you should have been, the technical advisor on the set of Whiplash.
No, because it clearly didn't matter, because it won a bunch of awards and nobody cares. But, like, if you ask the, I guess, musical
the drum unity,
they would say no, like, loud and thrashy and as fast as you can won't get you really anywhere. It's generally supposed to be controlled and smaller and fast. If you're going to try and... I can understand, you know, how hard it is to play high tempos, but to just be all banging and crashing like you're in the Ramones just does not make sense.
See, I think...
This wouldn't happen.
I think the drum
line... story with Charlie Parker, the Charlie Parker and the... Is it Art Blakey or... Papa Jones, Joe Jones threw the cymbal at him or something. That's bullshit. It was more like a, you know, first time in, it wasn't so hot. Nobody got that angry, and that's not how things were. And you don't just call a solo if you're doing some concert with somebody who's and you're pissed off, and everybody's like, oh, yeah, go for it. Just show it up. Like, those things just don't happen.
So do you think thrashy is, that's true of all music or of drums specifically?
Well, I mean, it's that movie was specific about, like, I guess a Juilliard type jazz drum ensemble, and you know, if that's what it is, then it should be very concise and contained and just very controlled, and that was the last thing that was.
Because I would always argue that one of the hardest bass lines in music history is "With or Without You." Because it's so simple and so exposed that if you make a mistake, you have to keep it up for 3 minutes straight on tempo, and it's simple. Whereas if you're Mark King from Level 42, you can just snap it and slap it, and it sounds...
Those are two good examples. Like, and I'm a big Adam Clayton fan.
I was hoping you were going to say you're a big Level 42 fan.
I don't like Bono, but I don't like that Level 42 guy, because he just could... You know, he's clicking and popping and pounding the bass like he's Mr. Hero.
Something About You is a good jam, though.
Sure it is, but it's just also shows the cheese factor of what Mark King...
I think we've established that I'm okay with the cheese factor.
Yeah, that's okay, but people love that stuff. But, I mean, Adam Clayton was a little more kind of cool and chill, but it's like he's enjoying it. When you're playing a good groove like that, it's fun. Like, you're not going to... If you slip up and screw up, that means you're not really thinking about anything.
I would just get so inside my head, though, because it's so simple, you'd start to think about, like, your dry cleaning. and then you lose track of where you are.
No.
You'd psych yourself out.
Yeah, you do
out.
If it's the first time. Yeah, if that's like you just were told to do that or... But after a while, that you're doing what you do, and you're it's like you're walking. Do you fall down after having a nice walk?
I do, yes.
You're ready to go for 10 miles.
All I'm saying is I don't know why they have to have beats in the elevator.
I hate that. The treadmill feel?
Yeah.
Like you're on a treadmill while you're checking in, and then you're on a treadmill in the bathroom.
I also think they might pump cologne into the hallways. Everywhere you go, it smells like Dracoir Noir.
Ugh.
It smells like you're at the palace at last call, and there's a machine in the bathroom for Dracoir Noir.
Yeah, Miamo is a tough city. Like, it's just kind of, it's got its own cheese factor that's just itself, and I don't like to go there too much.
Also, I'm curious as to what the people here do for a living. Like, it's 11 o'clock on a Monday, and people are just, like, running. Like, what'd you do today? I went running, right? And then what'd you do?
Yeah.
I took a break and then went running again. Like, who are these people?
Well, it's Miamo.
It's
Will
Miamo.
Smith. Remember that song?
Yeah, Bienvenido y Miamo.
Yeah.
So let's debrief quickly on the live show at the Rivoli. I was...
Yes.
First of all, in all sincerity, I was so moved by the number of folks that came out on a Tuesday night, bought tickets,
yes.
bought drinks, were happy to be there, how familiar they were with the show. Some of the stuff that we've done, I honestly didn't know how it would translate. I didn't know if Poem Sand would work. I didn't know if Hit the Post would work. And they both did, and it's because... The Bods were so into it and came to play and came to have a great time. It was really a highlight of my life. It was really cool. Because we've been doing this thing in a vacuum for over a year. And you grossly underestimate how much the show means to people and how attached they are to the whole concept of Canadianity. And to see it up close and personal was really cool.
Yeah, it really felt like we were just there with friends and talking and... having a good time with some buds. And
so,
that's what it felt like. It was easy to do. Obviously we can't wait to do more and get a feel for it and make it, you know, even better, but it was really awesome to do and to kind of feel the excitement and demand of the ideas and the fact that the people coming felt like they can divulge their thoughts, because there was a lot of, I guess, conversing going on when you're
totally
in that environment, and that's the best thing about it is just kind of getting a feel for the people there and the amount of people that came from different places and hearing the stories of all of them. It was amazing, so cool.
Well, and I just love the fact that you know, people will be walking around in I'm a Bud t-shirts, and the idea of two buds seeing each other out in the world and having that connection, that's so cool to me. So we should tell the people a couple of things just as kind of housekeeping. The first is we're working on making merch available through an online merch store, because you've been kind enough to ask where I can get an I'm a Bud t-shirt. We're on it. And the second thing is we wanted to do a live show to see if it would work, how it would translate, and of course our bigger plan is to take it to places all across the country. So let us know via the internet service where you live, where you'd like to see us come, and we'll certainly factor that in and use it as kindling for the fires of planning. And I think we can even go so far as to say we're looking at hopefully the fall to do as far east and as far west as people will have us.
Yes, we are going to go infiltrate Canadianity and see where Canadianity lives,
which is really exciting.
Sure, on all fronts. Yes. We can't wait to get to Fredericton on July 17th, 18th. I'll tell you that, eh, Bod?
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, we're hosting the Fred Rock Music Festival, and the lineup is awesome. Blue Rodeo, Hey Rosetta, Joel Plaskett. But I'm also excited about like East Coast Love Story and Highs and some of the bands that don't have as big a profile. The Stanfields are a great Nova Scotia band, and it's going to be a great 2 days of rock and partying.
Yeah, I've never been at a festival like this where I'm just kind of enjoying the music and talking about the music and enjoying it with you, that'll be a real gas. We've already had some amazing emails and tweets from people talking about coming, and it definitely is going to feel like a homecoming for us.
Well, you know what we should do eventually is have an annual Bodstival. I was thinking the Great Bodbecue. Yes. Where we just pound some meat, tell a few lies, Bod.
Oh, yes. And we can have a couple of Bods over for some Bods and drink.
I wonder if the people will ask you to sit in and play the rock drums with them.
I know a few songs from most of those bands, so you never know. You know, it would be nice to sit in with I don't know if Blue Rodeo would, because old Glenn's just such a monster that it's just, I don't even want to bug those guys. They're just so badass, you know.
They are.
But, you know, there's all kinds of fun bands, like Hey Rosetta would be a gas. Some East Coast Bods. I remember having lots of nights with those. Phil Maloney, the drummer, great, great guy. Great, great guy.
There must be like a code among drummers, is there? Like, do the drummers always gravitate towards each other at festivals? Like, to compare sticks or whatever?
Yeah, I think so. It's a lot like goalies in hockey, where you just kind of, you feel you get more. It. Well, it's the same. I'm sure everybody gets it, but it's just more, it just feels a little more blue collar for some reason. And, that's the closest I can get, because some people take offense to, you know, thinking that the drummer is more the people person, which isn't, you know, necessarily the case. But they seem to be a little more blue collar in a sense, because they're just a little more work ethic maybe with drumming than other instruments, where you're just by yourself. And if you're a good drummer, only comes from practicing. There's no kind of like flash.
Right.
And sometimes guitar players can get by with a little bit of flash, or a bass player can kind of get it by with that. But with drums, you kind of, if you're at a point where you're in a band and you're trying to be successful, the drums have to have, you know, a maintenance of confidence.
Speaking of bands,
from practice, when I used to play golf at the National, I used to play golf once in a while with, and then there'd be a guy and he's like, "Hello, Jeremy," he's a wonderful old Italian guy, he's like, "Hello, Jeremy, how are you doing today?" And I'd say, "How you doing?" And then he'd say, "Are you coming to play or are you going to practice? And I said, "I'm going to practice today." "Are you going to play or going to practice?"
"Going to practice."
I loved him. I love that guy.
Our band Miniature Ponies has a gig on June 20th at Onslow Junior High School. It's a benefit for classic. The community center in the community where we live. And we're opening for another band.
Where we used to live!
But our problem is everyone...
the old apartment song, if you didn't remember that.
Oh, is it?
Where we used to live, yeah.
Everyone in our band works in film, so it's been hard to practice.
We'll get back to that. We got to get back to that. Sorry.
It's been hard to practice because everybody works in film, so everybody's working different hours, and we don't get together enough.
Yeah.
And that scares me.
It does?
Well, a little bit, because it's a big gig. We've played two gigs so far to, like, under 100 people, and suddenly it might be 500. Like, to us, that's a big deal.
Are you guys, are you gonna fire a B&L tune in there?
Oh, man, we should.
Why not? What the frick?
Well, because most of what we do is kind of countrified. I guess we could do country twang B&L tune.
Why can't you do a country version of Jane?
Do you know what we've been working on?
Jane!
You Might Think by The Cars. That's a good tune.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Been working on that.
But I think you could do a Jane, like an up tempo country. Yeah.
You could do drums just with a mic, couldn't you?
Sure.
I want to play drums, but vocally.
Yeah, so you're missing it. The jiggadadas, they're kind of square.
Dude, what's a paradiddle? It's like,
Smothers. What?
What's a paradiddle?
Right, left, right, right. Right, left, right, right, left, right, left, left.
Say it again.
Right, left, right, right, left, left. Paradiddle, straight up, boom. Boom.
Is it called a paradiddle because it's onomatopoeia? Because it sounds like how you hit play it? Paradiddle.
I think so, probably, yeah.
So yeah. Why isn't there a word like boobrada, sit down?
Well, because what is that? There's, you know, flamadiddles and triplets, and they all have a sense of the verb. Of, I guess the word that is associated with it. They all, you know, double strokes are some kind, sometimes called mamadadas, because it's right, right, left, left.
That's got to be onomatopoeia. Mamadada, 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 mamadada.
Sure. Yeah.
Paradiddle, mamadada, paradiddle, mamadada.
Paradiddles, mamadadas.
What, hey. What song have you played drums on that you think that's me at my best?
Me at my best.
Like, what song are you like, dude, I crushed that?
No, there's lots of crushing, though. There's plenty, you know. I think people, that's for other people to say, drummers. You know, people like One Man Army, they like the fills in that song. They... for drummers, but there's other songs I like because, you know, for example, Stealing Babies had Elvin Jones on it, so he's such a great drummer from John Coltrane's band that sits with me in a different way, in a far more meaningful way than Chops, you know.
Talk about B.B. King.
Yeah, terrible passing, very sad. That guy, I guess, was kind of one of the final connectors to the Delta scene, the original Mississippi blues. B.B. King was kind of, he came from all of those people from, Robert Johnson to, you know, Lead Belly. Like, he grew up on that, and that generation was so entwined in him, and he was kind of the kid of the blues and became this figure, and he kind of came out of existence a little bit in the 60s, and it wasn't until the British guitar players kind of started talking about him, including Eric Clapton and Buddy Holly, even also from America, talked about him, but the Beatles and even, John Lennon, and so many different people kind of brought him back to life, that he had this renaissance, and he just kind of maintained that for the rest of his career, this nonstop touring and performing of wonderful guitar playing and singing, and just an ambassador for that style of music, and it's very sad to see types like that go.
It is. And I'm not suggesting for a moment it's not sad, but it was interesting to me that it was so widely framed as being tragic or terrible or, you know, a really sad pop culture moment, as opposed to celebrating what an incredible life and impact he had. I guess I was curious why people were so quick to say how sad it was. He was an aged man, lived a great life.
89. Well, I think it's because he's kind of the last one. There's not really many left, and people left from that era. And once they're gone, there's no, they start to die. That's just the way it is, you know. Even though Beethoven still exists, people don't sit around and talk about it. Kids and whatever else. There's a small percentage of people. So that's, you know, music that survived hundreds of years. Imagine now, like even the Clash, you know, the Clash becomes Green Day, and the Beatles turn into whatever other pop sensation is there. So now you have people like B.B. King, and, you know, especially for me personally, when you see jazz musicians pass away and go, there is no one to kind of be the PR for that legacy genre, of music, right? You know, it fades out, you know, there's no corporate entity that continues it as a whole. It just dies. So it's really sad to see the American blues. There's no real figureheads and spokespeople left. It's very sad. That's probably why.
Sickle it down to town. Let's take a break on TNT.
Sickle it down, downtown. Let's take a break.
Hey, Jeremy, will you come back after the break?
Promise.
Sick.
Where's my beer chair?
Keep it down, JT.
Welcome back to the 40th episode of Taggart and Torrance. Just to remind the people.
Keep it down on the May 2-4, baby.
I'm trapped in a hotel room in Miami trying to be courteous to my neighbors on either side. It's Monday.
And I'm in
the May 24th
a bedroom
weekend.
At my house. Yes.
Are you having to keep it down, bud?
I have to keep it down a little bit. Just because you're keeping it down, I'm going to keep it down.
Oh, that's nice of you.
Because there's school in the morning. Kids.
How many hotel rooms have you stayed in your life conservatively? Thousands.
Oh, two thousands, yeah.
Do you have a favorite hotel in the world?
I like ones that have feel, you know. The Phoenix in San Francisco's got a vibe. It's totally Motel 6, but like you feel you're there. Not that it's great.
You feel the ghosts.
Nice hotels. I was in one in Marbella, Spain that was ridiculous. Like, it just felt like Picasso might have been, you know, the guy who put the rooms together. It cool. Just felt so cool. Was it the Hotel Saint Antoine in Quebec City? That's a nice one. That's one of my favorites. That's not a newer one, but beautiful nonetheless. I might have the name wrong. I think I got it. But I like being in hotels in New York. But if you're trying to keep it down, you know, like keeping it down. Like, I remember one time being in a place where the side guys were like, keeping it down. And we were, I was with a couple friends and we were like downing the minibar. And this was in like Orlando or something like that. Just downing this mini bar, and this is like the biggest mini bar I've ever seen. Like, there was
a maxi bar.
Yeah, you know when they have like every different type little bottle, and you just kind of
mix
like planes, trains, and automobiles, just crush it all. And we were already drinking downstairs, so we crushed all of those, and we were like jumping around. We put the beds together and started jumping on them. Like that kind of banged up, like just madness. And I think I had to catch a flight in the morning. So my smart tour manager, Kevin Meikle at the time, was he said to the front desk, did you have any complaints last night? And they like went right to the room that was complained about. And he went right to that room and I was in there passed out. Or else I would have missed my flight.
Ugh.
So he had to carry me on his shoulder, like down to the lobby, and then I was just, you know, I just probably passed out at 5:30, and he came in at 6.
Like eyes burning from the sun.
Yeah, waiting at the airport, everybody telling me to keep it together, like shut up, don't say anything. Because if I keep my mouth open, I'm not going to get on the plane. And I just, like, I remember, like, having a conversation with a baby saying, like, trying to like, talk with the baby. Don't worry, buddy. You and I, we got this.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, just a mess. And then I passed out on the, and it was a connector flight from, like, Orlando to Denver. And, like, the flight stopped but kept going somewhere else. And I remember waking up with no one on the plane on the connection, and they were vacuuming in between my feet.
Hideous.
Like, totally. How greasy is that? Alone.
Oh, my God.
Getting the vacuum between the legs. Just like sad sack.
So what happened?
Nothing. That was the connectors. Like, I didn't get off the flight. Everybody else did, but I was just sitting there while they were vacuuming the plane.
The conversations that must have gone on, like, I don't know, should we wake them? No, just leave them for another few minutes.
Totally. Because I was all yapping on the way for the first hour or so on the flight.
A friend of mine had stomach troubles on a flight that boarded at Chicago O'Hare. And she had to go to the restroom when they were like, ma'am, can you please stay in your seat? And she was like, I'll be honest with you. No, I can't. I have to go to the bathroom. And the flight attendant was knocking on the door every 2 minutes because it was rush hour at Pearson. And she was like, I'm really sorry. I can't go back to my seat. I just need another few minutes. And by the time she was finally able to rally and get back to her seat, they were like number 140 for takeoff.
Imagine
feeling like daggers in the back of your head from everyone on the plane because you had stomach troubles. But it happens. What are you supposed to do?
Yeah. Yeah. That's rough.
Have you ever been sick on a plane, bud?
Yeah, I remember I've had migraines on airplanes. I've had the shits on airplanes. I had a yank on an airplane once.
No.
Once or twice. Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
Come on. Do you mean someone from the United States? Like,
in my seat, bud?
No, you have
like,
not.
Let's get this. And you know those, like, when you go into Europe, like, as 8-hour job, night times?
No.
Sure.
Oh, my gosh.
Just to say, check her off the list.
Yeah, that's on your bucket list.
On a plane. It's not the first one to do it. It's like the half-mile club.
Do you think that's a thing?
I don't know. I did it because I was bored, not to be a part of something. I did it to pass time, not to be on a list.
I love that I throw out these Hail Mary, like, have you ever, in the back of my mind, thinking, there's no way, and I don't think I've stumped you on one yet.
No, well, come on.
You've done them all.
You go on flights enough, and you're on long ones. I remember going on, like, flights to Maui twice a month, and those are, like, 11 hours. Like, what the hell else do you do? You know what I mean?
You watch a few movies.
Consistent. Watch a few movies, a couple movies, you snap one off.
I did that one summer, not that. I was working in Honolulu and Halifax because I was doing Trailer Park and a show for the Travel Channel. And I think 3 times in 12 days or something, I went back and forth. And I watched Nacho Libre 3 times and forgot that I'd seen it before.
Why would you do that? That's fucking ridiculous. You know, I can't stand that guy, man. Jack Black.
I think...
Why is he in movies?
Because I keep waiting still for him to return to his High Fidelity glory.
Yeah, that was one movie.
Here's the thing about High Fidelity. Nick Hornby
had a lot to do with that.
Wrote an incredible book that was so London-centric. And I was really worried when I heard they moved it to Chicago and it was going to be a John Cusack joint. But I saw it because I really liked the book. And Jack Black was awesome. I think that's all you want is a pinch of Jack Black. I don't think you want Nacho Libre.
I know, but you're talking about that's like his first movie, really.
I know, and it really and made like me laugh.
After that,
a lot.
He was fucking awful. Just, yeah, like cheesy and annoying and the same guy. He's still the same guy. You hire him tomorrow, he's going to do that guy again.
Was he? He was School of Rock, right? That.
Huh?
He was School of Rock.
I'm sure the kids think it's funny. If it's one of those things, like it's funny once and then you can't get past it. I don't know what it is. Like Will Ferrell, for some reason, I can handle it when he does it over and over, his shtick. Like I appreciate it for some reason. But like Jack Black, it just seems so one-dimensional and like woody.
See, Will,
that I can't hang.
Will Ferrell is fundamentally very funny. like just to his core. Yeah. But I went through a phase with Will Ferrell where I was like, he's actor Barbie. All they do is scotch tape a different uniform to him. He's a soccer coach. He's a high school teacher. He's a whatever. But he's still doing the same shtick. And then I realized that the Will Ferrell of it all is bigger than the actual character he's playing because his lines are so insanely funny. You just go along for the ride and kind of what he's doing doesn't matter.
Think about how hard that is to sustain like validity in Hollywood, in comedy.
I can't imagine.
For that long. Like, Jim Carrey was, I thought, you know, when he was doing 20 million a film, people thought he was never going away, and he did. Like, Will Ferrell's kind of trumped that. He's gone further. He's been out there now for almost 15 years doing these movies, and he's still going.
But he hasn't.
Adam Sandler is the same, but Adam Sandler, I think people have all understood that he's not funny anymore, and they're just, like, shitty movies. Like, everyone is terrible.
But I think
Will Ferrell kind of, people give him a chance.
I think the fatal flaw, though, of a lot of comedians is that in their desperate effort to be validated as an actor, they start punching above their weight or working outside their comfort zone, and people don't necessarily want to see that. It's very rare that people can make the leap. You know who did that really well? It was Robin Williams. Went back and forth between comedy and drama, and if he had glasses, he knew it was probably going to be serious. But, I mean,
totally.
He was really good in Good Will Hunting. He was really good in Awakenings. But obviously also
amazing.
Very funny comedic actor.
But then kind of like even he fell kind of, I guess, into the trap of being a character. I think that's what Will Ferrell doesn't have to worry about. It's because he can only be Will Ferrell. So they only make movies for him where Robin Williams is still kind of like, he would go in for a film where he wasn't, like, in the inception of the idea, you know?
But the interesting thing is there's a certain point in people's careers. Like, Rushmore by Wes Anderson is one of my favorite movies of all time. And Waiting for Guffman by Christopher Guest is another. They both had such distinctive, recognizable styles that after a few movies, they start getting accused of, well, now he's just doing Wes Anderson. It's like in the same way Christopher Walken gets accused of, well, now you're just doing Christopher Walken. Like, that's kind of the thing that they became known for, but as a society, we're pretty quick to turn on people and accuse them of just ripping themselves off. What a weird critique.
Yeah. Well, Rushmore is a good example. Like, I liked that movie. I thought it was good. I love that they use, like, quirky music, like a quick one by The Who was in there, and but also, it is a formula of a certain thing and kind of, I guess, a thumb in the nose of not just comedy, but even just a drama, because it kind of goes in between. There's always something crazy going on, but it's also kind of funny, you know, and that kind of gets old after a while, and that's probably why Wes Anderson kind of jumped the shark a couple films later, you know, because it was that same concept, like where you're doing that kind of funny, but also tongue-in-cheek and, you know, maybe a little dramatic and there's some crazy stuff happening, but it gets old after a while.
But I know it's got to also be the business side of things because, like I've said on the show before, the kids in the hall were at the Rivoli honing their craft for 6 or 7 years. Suddenly they have enough for a TV show and they do the first season and then they get renewed and it's like, well, now what? Wes Anderson comes out with Rushmore, and it's so unique and distinctive, and people freak, so they're rushing him to come out with another movie, and the well's kind of dry. That's the rub.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that is it. Yeah, I mean, you should make art when you have it. You shouldn't be forced to make it. That's just the way it is. I think it's like, if you're supposed to do it quick version, then you shouldn't be doing it. It should be someone else who has something as valid and as exciting. And that's kind of the problem with Hollywood is you do one great thing and all of a sudden you're given license to do 6 more great things and they're not that great, as opposed to looking for the next great thing. And that's kind of the way it was in the past. If you were somebody like Lindsay Anderson or something, a great filmmaker, Martin Scorsese or something, where you're making you're given license because they know what you're going to do. Nowadays, it's just there's, I don't know if it's there's too many cooks with producers and all these people that want to have their piss stain on it, but it just the product isn't the same because there's not one vision that's trusted, you know.
Well, it's also a little crazy with the remakes.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's the age-old issue with art and commerce intersecting.
Yeah. Well, think about movies. If you're an actor with all these comic book things going on for action stuff, like major motion pictures seem to be just comic-based driven remakes of whatever happened in the past. So good luck for trying to, you know, make your mark in the Brando scene.
Did I ever tell you about having a commercial agent in L.A.?
No, maybe not.
I'm terrible at auditioning. I really don't do it well. I haven't done it a lot in my career, and I'm apologetic and sheepish and feel like I'm wasting people's time, and I feel bad that they've seen 80 people, and I'm probably not the guy they're looking for. So my manager, I want you to get a commercial agent so you can get used to going into the room and auditioning and build a thicker skin and kind of get better at the art of auditioning. And I don't know if you'll ever book any commercials, but I think it's just a good exercise. Have I told you this?
I don't think so.
So I'm suddenly doing like the new Titleist 338. Man, watch it fly. And realizing how terrible I am as an actor. I can't, like, I have a whole new respect for people who can take a pull on a can of Sprite and look at the camera and say, ah, that's hard, dude. And well, some people are really good at it.
There's so many different things. Yeah.
So I went to this audition for a casino in Vegas. And this guy who's like Larry from Three's Company, who's the casting director, and it's in a warehouse in Rancho Cucamonga, and there are like a bunch of desperate people there, and I get called into the room, and it's like a flat room with bad carpet and overhead lighting. And the guy's like, all right, Jonathan, here's what we're going to get you to do. You're at the craps table and you're on a roll. Okay. I mean, you are killing it here, and your friends are on one side of the table and your new admirers are on the other. So I'm going to roll the camera. You're going to throw the dice down the table and you win again and you can't believe it. And I really want to hear and see that in your face when you do it. Okay. So hits go on the camera. And he said, I'm going to turn on some music to get you in the zone so you can kind of feel like you're in Vegas. So he turns on this like terrible music. And I fire the imaginary dice down the imaginary craps table. And the noise that comes out of my mouth is like, like not convincing at all. So he stops the music and says, okay, it was a good warm up. We'll try it again, Jonathan. What I'm going to get you to do, though, is I really want to hear it in your voice and see it on your face that you're killing it. Like, you're really happy about this. I throw the imaginary dice down the table, and I say, with a big grin on my face, I'm dying inside. And he turns the music down and goes, what? And I said, oh, nothing. And I left. And I've always thought how awesome it would be for people to be watching the tape.
Were you that like horrified and that you had to just?
I didn't even go on some of the worst ones, but I have friends who've gone on ones where it's like they bring in six people at a time and get them to all take a drink of Sprite and all go, and then leave. How devastating!
Yeah, so you were like, "I'm not doing this."
No,
that's what you were thinking.
I'm dying inside.
Yeah,
very dispiriting, but. I say sincerely that the people that are good at that, that's really a skill, and it's really a skill I don't have. And I've also said before, the older I get, the more I realize it's important to know what you're not good at and quit trying to mow that grass.
No kidding. Is that Richard Klein? Is that Larry?
Yeah. Who I think has an acting school in the San Fernando Valley.
That's right. You told me that. You told me. Did you?
It's almost worth taking a class about that? There. It's almost worth going.
Did you see him going behind the girl's shoulders? Like, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, the Regal Beagle. Did Richard Klein win at life? Discuss.
I think so. If he's in the San Fernando Valley doing a little acting classes, sure. Yeah.
This is what I think people get wrong all the time. He won the lottery, has a memorable role on a show that was impacted a whole generation. Just disappear. Just be thankful and check out. I think when it starts to stink is when people hang around too long, wanting to get it back or still trying to be in the game. Like, I guess it must be hard when you're in the middle of it to be objective about when it's over.
Yeah.
Oh my God, is it over for us, bud?
When it's like the, you know, you hear about like the Bonaducci thing or, you know, people that are trying to stay on TV or whatever, and it's just like not so good, Al, continuously.
I auditioned a bunch with Danny Bonaducci because he was trying to get back on camera after going through a bit of a hard spell. And he brought his wife to the auditions with him, and he was trying to sell, like, we're kind of a tag team, like we do kind of a vaudeville thing. And it was devastating.
Nice.
Douchebag.
Just like sad. Too much.
It's too much, bud. Gotta know when it's over.
Hey, let's take a break and then get to some of these wonderful questions from the TNT.
That sounds great.
Twitter feeds.
The 40th Keep It Down episode of Taggart and Torrens will continue in a moment.
And we're back at number 40. 40.
So, Buckets TP sent us a tweet that said, can you give May 24 some Canadianity context for us culturally deprived Americans? Love how many Americans listen to the show and love how they're proud Americanadianity. May 24, go.
Well, it's just basically famous as the third weekend in May, the Queen Victoria holiday on Monday. It just became synonymous as the May 24. I don't know why the leap is the leap, but basically that's just it. It's the third weekend, and for some reason it ends up being never towards the end of the month.
But it must be Price is Right styles, like closest to without going over.
Yeah.
Because why isn't Monday the 25th the holiday?
I don't know. Because that's the fourth weekend.
So it's Queen Victoria's birthday, but more so, I think, especially in Canada, what it symbolizes is we made it through another harsh winter, summer's around the corner, and it's traditionally, because it's a long weekend, maybe when people open up the camps or the shacks or the cottages, vacuum up the flies, see what the mice have been up to.
It's kind of like, it's the first, like, okay, like, it's not scary out anymore. It's time to maybe, you know, shake a leg and bake it and take it.
From Daniel.
Just get right into things. Slip right down and just shake it.
Let's put the dock in.
Yeah.
From Daniel, what Canadian movie would you have loved to start in? Taggart and Torrens movie excluded.
You know what would be great is if we redid Going Down the Road, you and I. You're, you know, the blonde and brunette. Perfect.
That'd be wicked.
Like, right?
Just, why hasn't that story been told again?
I don't know.
Actually, but I feel like it.
Just
it
trying has to been. Make, trying to make it in the, you know, from the East Coast. That's it. That's all that movie is.
It's like a they sequel go from, going up the road.
Do they come? Is it PEI? They coming from?
Yeah, I think so.
They're literally. Yeah, they go right to Toronto. Ages. To try and make it, and like it, they do not. They fail. One of them gets a girl pregnant. And it's over. They break up and everything. It's terrible. But Going Down the Road would be a classic remake, and I would be fucking all over that
game. Same. There's a Toronto just go there and, like, did you know that?
They go to Toronto thinking they can, like, just get, you know, and SCTV made a great parody of it where John Candy and Joe Flaherty did it, and they like, yeah, let's go and get some lawyering jobs, some doctor jobs.
Aww. Where's Toby? He's out in Toronto doctoring.
Yeah, let's get on the cars, get some lawyering, some doctoring jobs.
Aww.
Like, if you show up, and it's like you wait, and, oh, I might be a doctor.
Aww. It's kind of endearing.
Oh, yeah, man.
I worked on, Joe Flaherty was on Call Me Fitz a couple of years ago, and what a gentleman. Mm-hmm. And really, what a solid comedian. And just what you would hope, like, gracious and happy to share the spotlight, and nice. So awesome.
Isn't that amazing that the really funny ones are generally pretty cool?
Totally. In my experience, the ones who've been around a long time, generally speaking, are the ones that are awesome. It's the ones who have had a meteoric rise that tend to be getting above their raisin butt.
Like, you can't even say, because they're usually gone so fast that it's too obvious to even joke about.
Yeah.
Right?
Unfortunately, that's true. Like, I'm trying to remember, what was the show about the lawyers on CTV? Everybody,
Street Legal?
No, that was CBC with C. David Johnson and Cynthia Dale and Eric Peterson and Albert Schultz.
Isn't that what you said, though, or CTV?
No, there's a show on CTV about, like, young, sexy lawyers. And those people...
Oh, I have no idea.
Those people were buying their own hype, that's for sure. You get on a couple of billboards, next thing you know, you're getting too big for your britches.
Oh, goodness.
What Canadian movie we did... I've made no secret about the fact that I'd love to play Gordon Lightfoot at some point.
Yeah.
Big Lightfoot.
I don't know how that would ever work, ever, in a million years.
Well, I'd have to start with bloated Lightfoot, and then...
I know, but it's like... It's,
is that what you meant?
I just can't... I can't see your eyes, even if you had contacts, just doing Gordon Lightfoot.
Yeah, but Jeremy,
in my mind. I just,
if you could read my
as
mind...
As much as you'd like to do this... This is just, I know, it's just so fucking classic.
Let
man.
Me tell you something about rice cakes. I
just the Gordon Lightfoot story starring Jonathan Torrance. Finally, all I wanted out of everything.
Yeah. That's the end game.
God. That is so fucking classic.
I can maybe bankroll it myself. You can play Ronnie the Hawk Hawkins.
Oh, for sure. Oh, yes.
You should play Neil Young showing up to Yorkville in a hearse.
Oh, I could do, yes, that would be amazing. You guys want a jam?
You should Tyler from BNL. You play everyone else in the movie.
I got hash.
I would watch that.
Oh, yeah. I'm here, ready.
Yorkville is a story that should be told.
Yeah. Yeah,
I pitched that before.
My dad used to rock that. Yeah?
Well, Joni Anderson, before she was Mitchell, Gord,
Bruce Coburn,
Dan Hill, the band, Neil Young.
Well, the band were never really part of Yorkville.
I guess not, but Robbie was there for a while, wasn't he?
You know, the Yorkville wasn't really popping until the 60s, so like a lot of those bands that were going were kind of... I think even Neil Young had kind of happened by the, like, he was there, but, like, it wasn't, like, in the mid-60s, there's Neil Young kind of thing, you know what I mean? He was already gone, so it was kind of, I think, more of the folk community, but...
This is my stunt casting. You say to Alanis
Morissette... That was, like,
the
first place in Toronto that was kind of ruined by the corporate, you know, side of Toronto, where it's just... Kids can't have fun anymore.
This is the thing. As a natural dramatic arc, it started with the hippies, then in came the bikers dealing the drugs, then in came the cops and the town councilors to push them out, and it became the she shopping district that it is today. So as a movie or a miniseries, it actually makes a lot of sense. But here's my stunt casting idea. If you go to Alanis Morissette and say, do you want to play Sylvia Tyson? And you go to Sarah McLachlan and say, do you want to play Joni Mitchell? For sure they'd be into it.
Yeah, but I wouldn't watch that.
Why?
To be honest, even with, well, just, I'd rather just see it, the history be told in a Ken Burns fashion with the facts and the people and the pictures, as opposed to reenacted with people that are artists today that aren't those same people.
You know well, Stuart mean? Henderson, if you're at all a student of Yorkville, he wrote a book that's the comprehensive... almost academic breakdown of what happened and when and who was there and why. But all those folk houses like the Riverboat and the Purple Onion, that is a distinctly Canadian story that has never been told, and it has worldwide appeal. I don't know why no one's made that movie.
I agree. But I think it might be just more entertained to me as a documentary style.
This is what I was going to tell you about Rice Cakes. because we were talking about me playing Lightfoot.
Oh, there we go again.
I've been on...
I love it.
I've been on low-level gut watch for 4 months now. I like to snack, as I've mentioned. We like to watch TV in the evenings. It's been one of the most brutal winters on record. So every night, I've been swapping out chips and pounding rice cakes. So I'll pound a sleeve, or if we're watching like something long, I might pound two sleeves, like a whole bag of rice cakes, thinking I'm doing it right.
Yeah, but what kind of are the flavored ones? Yes. Or are you talking about straight?
The caramel corn ones. The
flavored ones are like fake, that you might as well have some chips.
Well, I might as well have a McFlurry, like a Rollo McFlurry.
Yeah.
Carol finally read the side of the thing. She's like, there are 70 calories in each of these rice cakes, and I've been pounding 10 a night for 4 months now.
Thinking that you're like on the good train, you're on the bad train,
like McDonald's salad,
fake. Oh yeah, that sucks when you're having fake eats that you think you're winning and you're losing.
I know. You should really just have a cup of whatever you want instead of the sleeves of rice cake garbage. Like I might as well be eating dust bunnies.
Yeah.
Just I've been eating doorstops made of sawdust.
And you know what I do is I have like one bag a week of that Chicago mix.
So how do you parse it out?
I'll kind of get the week prepared and see how I'm doing. And then like at one point I'll be like, I'll get the bag and I'll just fucking crush it. And it's gone in like 20 minutes. It's over. And then I wait another week.
See, Carol's an incredible baker, and I make food deals.
Next day, I'll take it easy. Next couple days, I'll take it easy. But, man, you got to once that bag's open, it's gone.
I make food deals with myself, so if Carol makes chocolate chip cookies, I have one. And then I think, well, I'm probably going to have one tomorrow, so it's probably better for me if I have a second one today so I can start to burn off those calories sooner. Like, total lie.
That sucks.
That sucks. Anyway, I don't know anyone who gets to the end of life and thinks, I wish I did more crunches, dude.
No. Hey, any more questions from the TNT Twitter there?
Yeah, all kinds. Something about Babcock. Pokey Bandit says, after Babcock, who will we endlessly talk about that ends up with the same team anyway?
Yeah, talk about ridiculous. Like, I understand that a coach can help a team, but, like, it's still... wherever he goes, like, it still has to be the team. And sure, it's great to have somebody like that. But that, you know, he's the kind of guy where he's like, everything's going to change and stuff's going to go like an earthquake.
Well, his pedigree is incredible. There's no question.
Too much hype.
And prime example, Taylor Hall and Jordan Eberle were playing incredibly well under Todd McClellan at the Worlds. But then you see something like what happened with LeBron last week, where he overruled the coach, change the play and won the game, which is, I'm sure, has coaches everywhere going, thanks, LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
But it does make you wonder, like, what is that role at that level?
I don't know. I mean, I know coaches in hockey are important. I don't think managers in baseball, like John Gibbons in Toronto, like, I don't think it matters anything. Like, they don't really affect the team in baseball. They just kind of hang out and there's someone to complain about, like, because you do see guys like, Madden, you know, had a lot of success in Tampa. But with most the case, like, you know, you do see Charlie Manuel and those kind of guys coming in the playoffs. But for baseball, like, it's the team and it's the players. And I think hockey has a lot to do with the team and the players, too. So... it has so much to do with also that tweet is like, it's just people love to talk and Babcock because there's a possibility that he might go somewhere. That's all they want to talk about. You know, it's nuts.
Well, he's not going to Toronto, is he?
I don't think so. I don't see the point. You know, you have someone like Shanahan there who is supposed to be that type of person where it's like, I'm doing everything and it's the ground up for me. You bring in Shanahan, who's going to do that as well. I see them only butting heads, if you ask me, so I don't understand what the point of that would be. I can see him having a lot more success in a Buffalo or a Philadelphia, to be honest.
I have a feeling the Oilers are going to trade Taylor Hall.
Why wouldn't they?
I think they're going to chum the waters to try to get a high-end defenseman a goalie.
Yeah, well, I mean, if I were a great goaltender, I would be looking there, same as defenseman. I mean, I was joking around with people on Twitter about PK and Carey Price.
Oh, me too.
Thinking like, well, do we want to win a cup in the next 3 years? Is this really going to happen with this team? And you look what the Oilers need, and it's not that insane in terms of a lot of contractual buyouts and arms put behind backs. But if somebody wants to win a cup, they'll go to that, you know, the idea of that offense. But at the same time, the Oilers need that big time, or else they're still in the same position as they've been in the last, you know, 3 or 4 draft picks.
They should merge. Ed Montreal.
Who? Yeah. Fuck, that would suck.
They'd be unstoppable. That's not
cool. Yeah, well, that's the way, you know, lots of teams could merge and be fantastic.
I guess. That's a pretty dumb thing to say, isn't it?
What's the next question, though?
Any plans for a live show in Halifax when Taggart comes out for Fred Rock? As we mentioned, we're working on that. This is a good question from Kirk DeGosta, former Bot of the Week, and mechanic on the Shipmobile for Trailer Park Boys. Really helped us out of a jam last year. Nice. What's the worst meal you've ever eaten? What was it and where?
That's pretty good. Do you have one off the top of your head there, Jonathan?
Well, culturally, I feel a bit weird about sharing this because I don't want to brand it as the worst meal I've had, but it was certainly unlike anything I'd ever had before. I was in a northern community, and the grade 4 class had just shot a caribou, and they just quartered it on a plastic sheet on the gym floor and invited the guests to help themselves. And
what do you mean, like raw?
Yeah, grab a scoop, pound it.
Yeah, but that's not that's some educated eating right there.
Oh, don't get me wrong. That's why I'm reluctant to say it's the worst meal I've ever had, because I totally get it, and it was an honor to be in that environment and have a traditional feast like that. But as something unlike anything I'd ever eaten, that wouldn't maybe naturally be something I would choose to eat in that particular way. That was a different experience for sure.
Because I've had caribou, I've had moose too.
Oh, caribou's amazing.
It's delicious.
Caribou burgers and caribou steaks and caribou chili, really good.
Yeah, wonderful. But raw, off the quarter.
And we also had muktuk, which is whale blubber, and that doesn't really break down.
Yeah, that's like a chew for days, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of the point. But I mean,
it stands to reason, just texturally, that's not something that we're used to eating. So, of course, it was a little different. That's why, again, let me be very clear. I'm not saying it's the worst meal, but it was certainly probably the most different experience I've ever had.
Yeah, that's tough, because my worst meal would have to be at a really great person's house, and they made pasta, and it just tasted like they put like dish soap in the pasta, like terrible.
Did you finish it?
No, I ate half of it and said I was full, kind of thing. But it tasted like it was being poisoned. I can't say who it is. It's a famous person.
Really?
But it was like, yeah, they
Mike Reno?
They made it. No, imagine. Mike Reno's house.
That's how rumors get
like
started. That.
Yeah. It's like one of those things where you're at a famous person's house and they serve you this food and you're like, you're supposed to eat it. But it's like, imagine you had pasta that tasted like they put, like, instead of, you know, there was clearly like some sort of tomato sauce, but it's like they probably, instead of olive oil, they used dish soap at the top. And there was this weird taste throughout the whole thing.
But they must
have
known. Like, if that was my dinner party, I would say, oh my gosh, you guys, clearly something didn't work here. Please don't eat it. Let's get some pizza.
No, that. But everybody else was crushing it. Like, no big deal.
Are you sure you didn't just have dish soap in your mouth?
No, man. This was just something beyond, like, believe me, man. I went, you know, I didn't. It was everything about it, like the whole, like, you know, when you eat something and it has like a taste to it that doesn't go away, every little bit of it.
Brutal. I got sick one New Year's Eve
with this soap
after eating a bag of mesquite crunchers. I got the flu and my girlfriend at the time was there and we'd just broken up and her flight didn't leave till New Year's Day. And I was sick on mesquite crunchers and having to talk about why things weren't working out. That was one of the most heinous food experiences I've ever had.
That's greasy.
Favorite cottage activity other than getting banged up from Colin Haggerty?
What?
Favorite cottage activity other than getting banged up?
Oh, well, I mean, clearly canoeing is a great time, kayaking, hanging out with on the fire, marshmallows. You know, s'mores.
I love the
fire.
A few
laughs. Yeah.
I love a good fire. Until somebody brings out their guitar and plays Wonderwall.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about doing a top five about, and maybe we'll in the next one, top five dude breaks out his guitar and everybody goes, ah, songs.
Yeah.
Wonderwall would have to be on that list, although we do Canadianity.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's... Yeah, like if somebody starts playing The Boy Inside the Man, not a good move at the fire. Right?
The Boy Inside the Man. I like I like it when people don't know that many songs.
I like the song, but I don't like come the second chorus, like imagine how long that's going to feel at the fire.
Or they start Summer of 69 in A and then realize it's actually in D and restart it.
Oh man, that's good stuff.
Do you ever play the drums around the fire?
This is the, no, I've played drums out in the field. I've played them outside, but when I first started, it was too loud in the house, so I had to take them across the street.
Really?
In Toronto, in this park, I'd go down in this park and just kill it in this field.
Ronnie, as a drummer, wouldn't be cool with you playing drums in the house?
Well, no, because I lived in an apartment. So, like, apartment building like in Weston. So,
do your kids play instruments?
Well, we have drums around, and there's guitars, and they fiddle with them. But I was, you know, it wasn't until I loved the instrument enough to want to do it. And like a sport, you know, you don't push them, you let them have fun with it. So there's instruments there, but I'm not pushing them into it, that's for sure.
I wanted to learn how to play the guitar when I was five of my own volition. And then every couple of years after I wanted to quit, and my mom would never let me quit, and I'm so thankful that she didn't, because it's a great joy, right? To have that skill.
No, for sure.
But absolutely. It is a fine line. Like, we're going through that now with our kid who's five. If they do activities from kind of every genre, like they play a sport, they play an instrument, they do a ballet or a dance kind of thing, and you could have activities every night of the week. How do you pick?
Yeah. No, I know. Soccer. Got the kids starting Wednesday night for soccer. Boys.
Yeah, Shug's going to play soccer this summer. Timbit soccer, bud.
There you go. Timbits. I like Timbits. I crush Timbits.
Favorite kind of Timbit? Go.
Some. I like those, the crueler type ones.
Honey crueler.
If they have them, those are rare.
After another breakup when I was probably 20.
Remember the cherry ones they used to have? The cherry Timbits?
Yeah.
Filled ones. Those were the best, but
after a breakup when I was 20.
Not filled. Like the cherry cruller styles.
Oh, gross.
Like sourdough is my favorite donut, the glazed sourdough. I love those Timbits, the sourdough ones. Fucking crush 12 of those in 2 seconds before I even know it. I'll fucking crush them all, crumbs.
After a breakup when I was 20, I went to Tim Hortons on Spring Garden Road and was there kind of at midnight and was obviously kind of, you know, not in a rush to go anywhere. And they let me go downstairs and make the donuts with them. I was there overnight till 7 in the morning. Yeah, it was really cool. And they used,
and it was like full on the old way where they weren't frozen. It
they
was
made
like
them in store. Them. Dude, I got a Canadian maple the other day, and she said, careful, it's just out of the oven. And it was hot on the outside and frozen inside.
Yeah, because they're frozen. That's the way they do it now. They're not baked from scratch.
I got a Canadian maple because it has less calories than a rice cake.
Oh, now it's time to go full bore.
But they have like Blue these, Jays they have donuts. Syringes to put the stuff inside the Timbits. I didn't even know. But Timbits, yeah. I don't know if they still do the filled ones. They have a little hole, and that's where you jam the needle in and pound it full of liquid.
Okay. Now it's time for some snacks. Let's get the hell out of here. Thanks a lot for this good times on this week on the TNT there, bud.
Hey, thanks for letting me keep it down, bud.
This is the Keep It Down episode number 40.
So it's well over middle age now. We can't be making noise like we used to.
All right, bud. We're going to be loud next time.
Nighty night, bud.
Night. Goodbye.